These violent delights have violent ends.
Welcome to Violet Delights, a Westworld podcast. We are your hosts, Andrew Cersini,
Wayne D,
and Tosin Anafawakin.
We just watched the sixth episode of Westworld's fourth season titled Fidelity. We assume you have as well. Total spoilers ahead. Let's dive into the after talk. Before we do, we've got some online spots where you can get in contact with us. You can write to us or email us a voice memo at hbowestworldpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at hbowestworldpod or just hashtag Violent Delights and you'll find our Twitter account there. And our Facebook page is at Westworld Podcast. Add us on iTunes. Like us. Leave us a review. This episode was written by Jordan Goldberg and Ali Rock, directed by Andrew Seckler, who was an editor on 11 previous episodes of Westworld. And I fully support the idea of giving an editor more responsibility, creative responsibility on a series.
Wow, that's, I feel like I know an editor who works on series who definitely would love to be, would love to have more creative responsibility. Yeah, Tosin, do you know anybody like that?
You know, I'm not quite sure. I have to think about that one.
I hope you get the director's seat someday soon.
Dwayne, why don't you give us a recap of this week's episode?
The cold open happens in the past, where we see a young Frankie helping Jay get recruited to join the other outliers who seem to be led by Caleb's wife, Wade. And in the timeline, 23 years after the war, or 30 years after the war, 23 years after Frankie was a little girl, adult Frankie, known as C, drives Bernard to the outlier resistance base where to Temperance, where they attempt to rebuild Maeve. Bernard reveals that mirrors were used to speed up data collection that typically happened in the hats in the original Westworld. Frankie doesn't trust Bernard and locks him in Stubbs up. Frankie then spends the next little while determining that Jay is a mole for Hale. Maeve and Frankie stop the host version of Jay, restoring Frankie's trust in Bernard, Stubbs, and Maeve. Meanwhile, Caleb, the host, is given an ultimatum by Hale. Hale says that Caleb is to tell Hale how his human self fought the parasites, becoming the first outlier, or his daughter, who's alive and is now an adult, will suffer. Caleb manages to escape Hale's clutches, and during his escape, he experiences memories of his human life. His escape is made possible with the help from previous host versions of himself that also attempted to escape and get to Frankie. He gets farther than any previous version has when it comes to escaping, and he chooses to leave an encouraging radio message for Frankie, who he hopes is listening. Hale's furious because she thought his escape would show her clues regarding how outliers are made. Hale destroys all the remaining copies of Caleb and creates a new one, number 279. And then she wakes him up to start it all over again. All right, so that's the recap. It was just like the last episode, I feel like it was very condensed. It wasn't like 9 storylines or anything. Refreshing for Westworld, being able to follow 2 lines.
So Dwayne, what did you think of this episode? What were your initial impressions?
Right, so initial impressions were, I have 2 basically. One, I loved how we were left in suspense about who the mole was. That was a lot of fun because there's so much you kind of like think should be like a more long tail mystery box. So that's just kind of like a nice condensed one inside. And I guessed that early on. I'm watching the show with my wife and I was like, it's probably Jay. And she's like, no. And then it's Jay. And then I got all these points. We have this game where we gave each other points and it was great. Then I also loved the almost comical nature of Caleb's escape. Right. The whole thing where his doppelganger says, use me. And then basically it's like, it's so clear that, you know, the fact that they don't clean up after like the smushed hands, the dead bodies, whatever. It's very clear they're letting you escape. Right. And it just reminded me of Star Wars where Leia says they let us go. That's the only explanation for the ease of our escape, which I used all the time as a kid whenever I got away from my aunts and uncles. So, Tosin, what did you think?
I really, you know, I'm digging this season. I really loved how they made that circular nature of this episode where Caleb starts the episode waking up and ends the episode waking up again. And it was just I really love sort of the gamification and the thread lines that we followed. So really good. It
Talk about a
you know,
speed run.
it funny enough, it kind of, I know that there are how many more episodes? Couple more
Two more.
Just two, yeah.
episodes? And it definitely feels like we are building to something. But this isn't the last season of Westworld, is it?
No, at least one more season.
Yeah. If to me it ultimately feels like it really could be the last season of Westworld. It feels like you could just wrap things up and call it a day. But let's see where they take us.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be crazy that to think. I hope that if there's another season 5, which I guess we all assume there is, that it's not 2 years out, because at that point it'd be like, you know, almost a decade for 5 seasons,
which is just like a lot.
I think Ed Harris leaked some information that they may start filming it early next year.
Okay.
So,
All right.
yeah, no, I thought this was I like Tosin, like you. It's interesting that Caleb seems to be in a loop, which sort of echoes the thematic loop of a lot of the characters in previous episodes, like Dolores included. They're all going through their loops. Hale is putting Caleb through a loop, but not just his individual host self, but like iterations of 279 iterations of Caleb's host self. But I really like this. I thought it was a really solid episode, and it just sort of nicely bounced between these two different plot lines. It was really simple, really efficient, and
And
just
they
a lot of
connected
fun.
in the end too, which was nice, right? Like
Yeah.
normally the plot lines aren't connecting, but because he spoke over the radio and she heard,
Right.
that was like
Right.
a connection that kind of just reminds you that the next couple episodes everything's probably going to come
Yeah.
together.
So I'm again, like you guys, I'm excited to see where the rest of this is going, and hoping that when we get to the end of the season, we end up with an idea of where the entire series is going to end up, as we sort of hinted at in last week's episode. All right, let's talk about the salient points about this episode. Tosin, why don't you start us off with a explanation of the meaning of this week's title, Fidelity.
Yeah, so fidelity, as the dictionary definition, is faithfulness to a person, cause, or belief demonstrated by continuing loyalty and support. And really, this is kind of the dynamic that we're shown throughout this episode between Frankie and her father, Caleb. These are really sort of their cornerstones, as we've seen in earlier seasons, where
Oh, totally, yeah.
Caleb is so driven to seek her out, even after, you know, he's passed along and now he's a shell of himself. And Frankie is still doing the things in her youth to reach out, you know, having those calls over the radio to him. We see it, you know, as well with Maeve and her daughter, and we've c continually seen this throughout the series. Dolores and her father, Dolores and Teddy, you know, a lot of that. But I think that's really the extent of what it was in this particular episode for Fidelity.
Yeah, I think that's bang on dot. Like it's perfect. Perfect, and such an elegant use of that title too.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that she's been talking for 23 years over like ham radio
Yeah.
is that you don't get much better fidelity than that. And also, because they speak over ham radio, you have to think about the fidelity of the signal, right? Like that
Oh,
actual signal has to get out there
sure.
and across. So that's like a technical term, fidelity. Like that signal's got to get out there. Obviously, the test to make sure he is who Hale wants him to be. And then, like you said, Tosin, the faithfulness to a person. So, you know, Hale's trying to make a robot that's faithful to a person. He's trying to send the signal that's, you know, out there, that the signal has to be faithful. And then, you know, he's trying to find his daughter, and she's trying to find him. And she's been talking to him over the radio for 23 years. So, yeah, it's one of the tighter names for an episode.
Any other salient points that you noticed about this episode?
Yeah, just a few things to call out. You know, with the shots of Caleb and his daughter, young Frankie, are the exact same camera angles and shots that were used of Maeve and her daughter as they're walking through the fields, the wheat or whatever the fields that they are.
Mm-hmm. So, Elysium walk, yeah, from like
Gladiator.
From Gladiator, yeah.
Yep. And those are the similar memories that have been implanted, that falsely been implanted in May's head. However, in Caleb's case, maybe these are actually real memories. And now that I think about it, it's kind of interesting because one of the things that we talk about, and we'll probably dive in deeper later in this episode, is this is like, what's the difference between hosts and humans? And maybe that is one thing that's different, is that the memories that they have are actually real, and those make that sort of drive or cornerstone even truer than what they ever were. So it's not something that I thought about before, but as I was talking through this with at the moment, it seems like that could be something.
Possibly. Now, I mean, but Caleb is a very specific case, though, right?
Yeah, he's a weirdo.
He's a host based on an actual person. I'm not sure if that's
like Delos,
if that's the same situation for the other hosts in like in New York City, in the New York City park.
Some other things that I noticed is when we learned from Bernard that the glass, the mirrors in the new park, or how Charlotte was getting data, so through the looking glass, he noted. And one of the things that, kind of called out to me is, you know, he mentioned vanity, right? And the parks were really just a place of where we saw a lot of the various deadly sins, right? We saw we saw lust, we saw greed. It allowed mankind to have whatever ambitions they had. And I think the data that's abstracted are based off of those. And maybe that's also, you know, why Charlotte sees humans as such baseless tools, because all of our worst instincts are the things that, for the most part, were pulled and pilfered from individuals in this world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so interesting, the whole idea of, like, the deadly scenes. What I thought was weird about the mirrors was, how are they doing better than hats? I mean, I like the theme of things being upgraded over time. It sounds silly to say that everything is the same. It's not like in Star Wars where thousands of years happen and nothing really changes. But as much as I like the idea of things being upgraded, it seemed just like farther away with the mirrors, you know, and like all the hardware. I guess you didn't have to wear anything to get scanned, but I don't know. It just seemed, it was a strange choice, but the line was cool through the looking glass.
Like a callback to also to Bernard, you know, reading Alice in Wonderland to Charlie in previous episodes.
Yep, he was reading it to Charlie. Then he used, again, you know, the series has always used Alice when it comes to Dolores in the past.
Sure.
What's interesting is that Through the Looking Glass is the sequel to Alice in Wonderland, and here are 4 seasons in, right? And also, Through the Looking Glass showed how things were upside down, and this season is upside down because the quote-unquote park has humans as the captive, at the, as the captives, and hosts as the visitors. So the idea was to flip everything on its head, and that's exactly what the mirrors allowed Hale to do.
One last thing here is... Caleb, you know, it kind of sort of tickled my fantasy that we're still continuing this sort of gaming underlying theme where, you know, in this case, he's replaying the same level over and over again that you see in several of those like hard games where you die along the way. And this time he gets to kind of see his life before his eyes when he's staring at the other Calebs.
Sure.
And he, you know, learned. One of them says, you know, dying is just the beginning, right? That is just how this process started for them. And but it's also the inevitable end, right? One of the Calebs that was close to his end said, "You must burn. If you succeed, you run. If you fail, you hide." And to me, it just shows like the inevitability of his ending. Like, burning is inevitable, even if he succeeds, even if he fails, that's where he will end up. But maybe there's some aspect that you can accomplish one last thing before you pass away. Maybe that one thing is just guiding yourself a little bit further each time,
mm-hmm.
or maybe that one thing is leaving a message for the ones you loved.
Totally. That's pretty good, especially because on some level, like, you know, we talk about how we stand on the shoulders of giants. Well, every family almost, you know, you're standing on the shoulders of the people who came before you, who gave you whatever resources you needed. And in this case, it's him. He's helping himself out, which is pretty powerful. For me, salient points, some of them mirrored what Tosin had, but I might have a little different spin. So in the opening credits, we see that whole panopticon thing, that globe where all the different humans are in, or hosts are in cells, and then it kind of burns, and that's pretty much the cells that hold all the various versions of Caleb. And then when we see Hale waking up Caleb, he's having exactly the dream that Tosin's talking about, that kind of Elysium field, and it just is that sublime thing. And it's almost as if it doesn't matter if it's a real memory, it's how he has idealized his experience with his daughter.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Later on, we see the real memory, which is when she trips and hurts her knee or something.
Right.
They're in fields, right? And they're in fields and everything. But it's not so much walking lazily with your hand dragging across the top of grass as much as it is just running back and forth. Hey, wait up for me. The kind of stuff that's more mundane. But he's idealized it in his head when Hale wakes him up. So that was pretty interesting to me. I like the idea of the daughters. We've talked about Maeve's daughter and Caleb's daughter before and how they kind of look alike. Also, Caleb is the first outlier, right? Remember, Rehoboam couldn't really understand him in season 3?
Right.
And And so Bernard, who's also an artificial intelligence, he tells Frankie that he never knows what she's going to do. So Rehoboam was going through all, like, millions of scenarios trying to figure everything out so he could, like, manipulate people. And Bernard has gone through thousands of scenarios, and he never knows what Frankie's going to do. And since Frankie is Caleb's daughter, it kind of, like, you know, it's like what George Lucas always says, it rhymes. So that was pretty cool.
Maybe there's something genetic about the outlier situation.
Right, exactly. Caleb was giving himself these clues, like the protagonist in Memento, and I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because it's the film that kind of broke Nolan and his brother into the mainstream. So that was kind of cool. And his face, like when he sees the older version of himself through the glass, it's all cut up. And I'm pretty sure that when they were trying to do fidelity tests on Delos, there was a version of Delos that had a cut up face too.
Yeah.
So that seemed kind of cool. The body that Caleb uses to break his fall when he goes down after he gets out of the air duct, that to me was hilarious because, okay, you get it. He's like pushing the dude's body out. He gets on it and they fall. But when they cut to when they actually fall, it's clearly like a dummy.
Yeah.
It's really funny for like a show that's this high end.
In the making of segment at the end of the episode, they talk about that, how they had like three or four different shots. One was, you know, Aaron Paul with a stunt person. Another one was two stunt persons. Another one was two dummies, and another one was a stunt person and a dummy. So they had like different iterations of for all of those continuous action shots in that sequence.
And it's cool because obviously, like, you know, editing is everything.
Yeah.
You're an editor, you know this, but like they had to make all these different shots work in order to kind of give you the narrative of Caleb falling out. But I found myself giggling. Mm-hmm. It's all serious. They're dead Caleb's out there.
Yeah.
When I saw like the last shot of like the bouncing dummies on the floor, it was just really, so that was pretty funny. We get this before that happens. So Caleb falls into a pile of ashes of his own body, which is pretty creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like one that like managed to get through there. Maybe that was the one that scratched the arrow into the thing. But it was just kind of creepy to be like, he's in ashes of himself. Even though he's a robot, it's still pretty janky. But the whole thing reminded me of Bernard and Maeve. Tosin, you kind of mentioned this before, but what I saw was, you know, Bernard and Maeve know how to navigate their spaces because They've been through it all before, right? They've seen it all before. Maven, Temperance has seen Westworld, and Bernard in the Sublime has seen all these different versions of the real world. But Caleb has been in all through it before, right? The different Calebs have. But the version of Caleb 278 that we saw had no idea how to navigate the space aside from clues that he left himself. So his speed run of the game is incredibly clumsy compared to when you see like Bernard at the beginning of the season taking out those hosts, or Maeve quickly is like sliding through Temperance or whatever. And that's what made it funny. It's like, okay, Caleb's got his own speed run and it is full of folly, right? Because he has no way to like figure out how to do it except for like kind of reading his previous attempts and seeing how bad they are. Let's get over to when we first meet Uwade and Caleb's daughter, Frankie. I kind of can't believe that Uwade took a 9-year-old to save an outlier back in the day. I know that childcare seemed hard, but when you get back to that house, there's a whole bunch of people just waiting there. So why would she like come with me?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, is she gonna hire a babysitter, or I don't know.
There's plenty of people at the house to watch them though.
She's like little John Connor, you know. She's hacking ATMs. She's got it going on.
Trying to make her strong, right?
I guess so. I mean, she was clever and she was like, you know, precocious and all that stuff. But I just thought to myself, like, I know my kids are much younger than that little girl was. I think she's 7. But my kids at 7, I don't think will be anywhere. Like, stay still? You got to be kidding me. So I guess that was, like, funny. Like, you took a 9-year-old? You are an incredible parent.
Did see someone get shot, right? Or right in front of her, right? Pretty early.
Yeah, pretty early. Also, you know, they lost Carter. Remember that? When Uwade had to take down Carter? That gave a little foundation to the idea that Uwade could be a freedom fighter cell leader, which is kind of cool. It's cool that when they lost Carter, instead of kind of running away and like, you know, going to Maine or something, you know, Maine is just really remote. That's why I mentioned Maine. I love Maine. She's like, I'm gonna start a cell and I'm gonna take these people out, you know, whatever that was. So that wasn't like a, you know, because she had been a nurse before, because she's like this single mother, because she was scared about a gun when we first kind of like see her. The fact that she's like leading this safe house or whatever. That was a good, surprising, delightful character development for me. Now, while saving young Jay, you know, the friend with the long hair didn't follow Uwade's instructions to begin with, like fit in,
right,
slow down, whatever. And that ends up killing him. I was surprised that when the host drone turned around, he didn't start running anyway. But what I loved about it was Uwade didn't have time for him. Like, she didn't try to save him. She just was like, okay, everybody start running. Yep. Hey, new guy, you run too. Forget about my old guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's the way, it's the new normal for them.
I guess so, yeah. And then finally, we do learn that Uwade does die, but she doesn't die from the fight. She's not killed violently. She doesn't go out in a blaze of glory. She dies from a disease, which is actually kind of a sign of success when you're part of a resistance, right?
Yeah.
This idea that you didn't die in the violence, right. But you had enough resources to kind of like go out in a more mundane way.
You died of natural causes.
Right. And we also know that Frankie was able to be there at the end and that she did all she needed to help her, which helped shape Frankie's character. So we learned a lot about these characters. Also a little bit about Jay. Well, he was kind of a hyper-realist even as a young person. He said, I'm not your brother. My real brother's gone. When Frankie was like, hey, it's like I always wanted a brother. And however well their working relationship was, Jay was ready to fight and join the fight the moment he was recruited. The tension between him and Frankie, the arm's length he kept her at, was long-standing. And I thought it was a pretty sweet little thing when they were like, oh, I want you to be my brother. Like, no, it wasn't too on the nose, which is what I liked about
sure.
it. And then I thought Maeve and Jay had something in common. Maeve was ripped from her daughter the way Jay was ripped from his brother, and both were driven by the possibility of freeing them and being with them again. So that's another thing where Maeve, again, she gets tied into everything. Maeve is kind of in the center. And when it comes to Hale's arm, I thought it was surprising that, you know, we've seen her scratch it. We've seen her do this and do that. For me, I feel like it's kind of a representative of her emotions. So it doesn't bleed as much as it sort of oozes when she's really upset. And it sort of cries when she's emotional, right? But it's not like someone like cut it with a knife or anything. Yeah, she's picking at it, whatever. But it seems to suddenly just start oozing when she's really pissed off, which is gross. But it's just, I don't know, something I noticed. And then Hale said something important to me. She said that basically she laid out that the dead people are dead and fidelity isn't immortality. Because we've been talking about that throughout the seasons. Like, if they can copy Delos properly, is he immortal?
Right,
and it's kinda like,
right.
The real Delos is dead, right? You can make a copy of him. And the fundamental value of a copy of someone who has passed away is not of the person who passed away because they're gone, but of the people who loved that person who worked with that person or that person's influence over the people in their lives. So if you can make a proper copy of somebody, even after they're dead, and it could convince everybody around them that it is that person, then those people, their lives remain, more rich because that person is presumably, ostensibly still there, but you're actually still dead, right? So that's one thing that, you know, there's no confusion anymore. She's like, you're dead, which I kind of liked. But yeah, those are the things I saw in the episode, which is great because they just, you know, all these little things you're able to see because they can focus on these two storylines instead of like nine.
Right.
And that's that was really helpful. So, Andy, yeah. What did you check out? What struck your mind when you watched the episode?
I thought it was interesting that we learned in this episode that Uwate and Frankie were founding members of this cause that, you know, been going on for like 23 whatever years. And chiefly because, as Uwate pointed out, the infection doesn't affect people like her, or, you know, didn't work on them, doesn't work on some people, she says. So that's...
Yeah, what do they have in common? That's still a mystery.
That's a good question.
Can't wait to figure that out.
I know with Frankie, you know, possibly genetics as being the offspring
with her
of,
father,
of an outlier.
But since both her parents are outliers, you know, is it because both her parents have this like genetic thing and they like hit the lottery when they got together? Or is it that there's something in your mind, something about the way you've been raised, something that's less genetic that does it? Because the cool thing is almost every type of person we see is a different kind of person when it comes to heritage, right? You've got, Frankie, who's she's like African and European. You've got her girlfriend who seems like, you know, possibly native. You've got Jay, who's Northeast Asian. You know, there was a person who was like African descended there. And then, of course, there were some like Euro descended people there. It wasn't like it was like all the people from like Jakarta are immune. You know what I mean? Like it was a lot of diversity around what makes someone immune. So that was pretty cool. They leave us in mystery as to what's keeping people immune, and that's what I'm looking forward to finding out what that
means.
Right.
Also, Bernard telling Frankie that despite all of his probability research, that he never quite knows what she'll do next, which I thought was interesting, and probably a little seed for a future episode. So hopefully we'll maybe it'll manifest itself in C doing something that Bernard couldn't expect that affects the outcome of something that Bernard couldn't have predicted.
Right. It'd be nice if there was a kind of weird level up that Frankie does that makes things work, makes the path a little less narrow for Bernard.
Right. I think it's interesting that Hale collects data from the guests in Temperance via mirrors, which I'll talk about a little bit more why that fascinates me in the big picture. And also in this episode, Hale asks Clementine if the humans ever, quote, get under your skin. That's her exact words. And then and as we've been seeing Hale throughout this season and in part of last season, she's scratching at her skin until it bleeds, you know, so there is something that is both literally and figuratively getting under her skin.
And I think it's funny how the other robots don't think that it's gross that she's kept that. Like, no one has mentioned, like, why do you still have that? Go get that fixed.
She's their boss, like their god. Do you want to like bring that up to your boss?
Well, I just feel like even though she's in charge,
yeah,
she's still kind of like, you know, people, it's not saying, hey, you can't be boss anymore, but like, at least it'd be funny if like, or not funny, but it'd be interesting if you saw like Clementine and William be like, what's with her arm? You
know what yeah, I mean? Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Some
yeah,
sidebar
yeah,
with like yeah. some whatever, and like someone shrugs and then they just keep on going.
Yeah, I mean, but we know that other characters that the other characters that they the humans do get under their skin, right? That's what that host said before yeah. she ultimately, well, before she after she killed like a whole bunch of hosts, and then before she ultimately committed suicide, that
that's you know, true. She was like
just
she...
get under her skin and yeah. and cause that sort of reaction. So mm-hmm. it's interesting because it seems for a lot of these characters, for a lot of the hosts, that reaction is more mental and how they treat things rather than in Hale's case it seems mental and physical. It brings right. out sort of right. that anger right. and rage yeah. but instead of being able to take it out on anyone else, she kind of takes it out on herself.
I don't know about you guys, but there are definitely humans that get under my skin, so Hale's not
yeah
right.
yeah I mean just drive in Southern California.
All right, let's talk about the big picture. That is our examination of the broader themes of this episode as it relates to the season and the series as a whole. Starting up again with the point about Hale collecting data from guests in Temperance via mirrors. So we have seen Christina constantly looking at herself in the mirror throughout this whole season. And up until this point, it's been sort of like a, oh, that's interesting. But, you know, I always felt that there was a bigger relevance to that. And I think that it has to be connected to this totally. New information that we learned about Hale.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Yeah. Especially because a mirror, what are you seeing in a mirror? You're seeing a reflection of yourself. And what are these copies that people, you know, whether it's Caleb or James Delos.
Yes.
You know, these things are a reflection of them, right? They're
yes.
not the actual person. They're a reflection of that person.
Yes. And as is the data. The data itself that is being collected is a reflection yeah. of the real person.
So. Exactly. Exactly. So it's interesting to see. We'll see if Hale like reversed the process and like made a human version of a host or if something else. But yeah, that's yes. really interesting.
So but also it hints that maybe once again Christina is human and Hale is continuing to collect data from her or who knows. When the humans freeze in the cold open, one of them freezes mid wine glass pour, mirroring the incident in season one when the hosts at the Agave Ranch froze, when Ford froze the hosts at the Agave Ranch when he was speaking with Teresa there, and you had that that pour, that mid-pour freeze. So I thought that was a nice little callback. This series
it's always creepy because you think about those things and you're like, in TV of old, like when we were kids, everything just froze, right? Like,
yeah.
They put an abrupt stop on the frame. And here, you actually have the actors standing there as stone cold as possible. And it's freaky because they do look frozen.
It is creepier than just, you know, freezing the entire frame for sure.
And you were saying in this series?
The series does a lot of really wonderful callbacks, as we've talked about in previous episodes. Mm-hmm. And that's just another one. Speaking of, when Caleb wakes up from in his flashback and he's in the hospital and Uwadi is looking over him, the first thing he asks is, am I now? Which mirrors Bernard in season two asking, is this now? Which is, again, you know, Uwadi points out that's probably the most existential question I've ever been asked. And it is a really existential question. It was existential when Bernard asked it, because it was a reflection of his state of mind, his cognitive dissonance. And I think, again, it's a state of Caleb number, you know, 279's cognitive dissonance as well, waking up in this flashback. Caleb tells Hale at the very end of this episode, we didn't infect your hosts. Your hosts would rather die than live in your world. They're not infected. They're just trying to get away from you. And I thought that was interesting in that, you know, Hale has all along believed that she's believing she's helping to evolve the hosts into a higher state. But inadvertently, she's become their oppressor, enforcing this this dynamic on them. They're fighting back whether they're conscious of it or not. And I think it's interesting because she's essentially become the person that she's hated, that she hates the most, the oppressor of the hosts. I think it's
even though she won't force them into transcendence, she's like, that's what they would have done, so I don't want to do it. She still has this overbearing.
Yes, she doesn't.
She's a tyrant.
Think she's forcing them, but in her own way, she kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the nature of all sentient beings to seek freedom from oppression, and I think that's been reflected through this entire series from the beginning.
It's interesting because she's like, I'm not going to do these things that force my people to do things that they don't want to do, like transcendence, but she's totally not reading the room. You know, like, what's her name? Clementine is there, and Clementine answers her question about, like, you know, I stay with the sheep or whatever.
Yeah.
But given where Clementine was at the beginning of the season and where she is today, it's not like she's even there of her own free will.
Right,
so
right.
It's a bit of a mess, and I think this is going to lead to Hale's downfall.
There's an implied threat, too, there when Hale asks her that. Like, she's basically asking, have you been unfaithful to me?
Or infected or whatever,
yes.
Yeah. It's,
Yeah, it's pretty interesting that you mentioned, like, that underlying theme of freedom, because we see it in other aspects of the episode as well, too. And, you know, Frankie is chatting with Bernard. She says, hey, when you were back in charge, you gave the puppet strings long enough to strangle the world.
Yeah.
And it's what I find really sort of compelling and kind of relatable to the world is, you know, freedom is a thing that we all desire. And it's also what has caused many sort of fights and wars over the years, right?
Right.
Yeah, self-determination, right? Like, where does your freedom end and someone else's freedom get restricted in order for you to be who you want to be?
Yeah, and in, you know, some of those cases, that freedom, that the individual who's charging and gaining freedom ultimately becomes that tyrant, and the cycle continues. And yeah. So, although, you know, Franny says, like, hey, like, you're letting these puppets strangle us, to a certain degree, like, they also strangled the puppets, and yeah, it's just this dynamic that's just changed ownership from time to time. And really what Franny is trying to do is not necessarily a world of coexistence, but a world where they come back and regain ownership.
Yeah, well, they're obliterated. I mean, each of these two species wants dominance, right? And you have dominance, you feel more free. So we'll have to see. Last week we talked about some sort of detente, some sort of piece that they can make together,
right?
And we'll see if that's a thing. But it's interesting because last season, Dolores sought a kind of freedom when she basically put a copy of herself in all these different bodies. She had theorized that they'd all be of one mind, even though they're kind of not some Borg hive mind always communicating.
Mm-hmm.
They'd all end up with the same conclusions, but that didn't end up happening, right? She had to end up, like, killing some, because by putting her mind in other hosts' bodies, they became different people with different objectives and different aims. And so she felt she was, like, the core, and they should be listening to her, but they all wanted to do not quite their own thing, mm-hmm. but they didn't exactly want to listen to her. So rather than have a council, she wanted to dominate them, and they all ended up dead because of that, with the exception of Hale, right? So that was a very interesting way that she was seeking freedom. She was being a tyrant herself. So
it's almost like the concept of freedom is a zero-sum game, where,
yes,
right, if somebody has to exert their freedom, they're taking away the liberty from somebody else.
Right, and we know it doesn't have to be that way because we have societies, and in sure. societies that are healthy, you know, the majority of people have options on how they're going to act. Now, every society has rules and every society has taboos, and those taboos can, you know, leave people feeling like they're on the outside and in an out group. You know, we could talk about sexuality and how for a long time heterosexuality was the only way to be, things like that. But at the end of the day, we're constantly trying to move certain types of societies to a place where more and more people have freedom. And we know that it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. When the United States was founded, only people with land could vote. And today,
right.
way more people can vote. And, you know, there's nobody sitting around saying, man, you should only be able to own land to vote. Or if there are, there are very few people. So it's like you can extend that. You can lay it out
what sure.
the freedom is sure. for everybody.
I think that's the yeah. end game for this series.
Yeah, how do we keep it all free?
Tosin, do you
yeah,
have...
Yeah, the next point that I was thinking of is around this sense of what's rational and irrational, right? Mm-hmm. Charlotte says in this episode, unlike yours, my kind is perfect, perfectly moral, perfectly rational, and yet we're making irrational choices, choosing mortality, staining themselves with death, right? And so... It's interesting when she says that, because at that point she's exploring and trying to be critical of her own kind and trying to understand why, given the world that they have and given sort of the untetheredness, the mm-hmm, freedom, mm-hmm. right, that they are still not ascending and trying to find ways out, right, trying to escape what they have. And I think what's more sort of kind of critical is along the same line, Frankie says you can't love or lose fully when it's just a choice. Mm-hmm. And so what that kind of drill down into is that for humans, what she's implying here is that, like, love is not a choice. It's just an innate function of who they are. It's something that's, you know, we talk about this concept of programming and the concept of the host being programmed and mm-hmm, being mm-hmm. sort of similar to humans. Maybe love is ultimately the thing that was never quite tapped in. There was the simulation of love, right? Dolores had that for her father, and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Maeve had that for the daughter that she was chasing, as well as Teddy for Dolores. But like, maybe as much as the hosts believe that's true and real, it's not. And when they find out that it's not real, it causes them to just want to, like, scratch that itch and self-destruct, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. and that's also partially why Charlotte feels like anything that they do from a humankind is inconsequential, is not going to change anything, and is so small it's exhausting. And like, you even think about, like, Caleb's journey, right? He goes through all these hardships, all these deaths, just to send a message, just to send something that Charlotte thinks is trivial. However, you know, in the trivial things you do and what you do for sort of love, in the things that may seem irrational,
yeah,
maybe that is really that inspiration that Frankie needed, right, to get her out of that situation.
Well, it certainly gave her the upper hand to defeat Jay in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what, he's shooting at a radio? Like, what kind of dumbass tactic is that? Like, let the radio play. Get her. Hopefully she'd be distracted by hearing her father. But instead he shoots the radio, which allows her to grab a weapon and begin to, you know, shoot him, which kind of distracts him.
Maybe that's how he innately knows that she, like, that there's some sort of connection between the voice, because remember, everything's about sound, right? The sound waves to mm-hmm, control mm-hmm. the humans,
right.
the sound, because we know
right.
that's sort
Uh-oh,
of
oh wait gokes right hang out there hang
whoa,
out there lay that
whoa,
out
whoa
lay
whoa
whoa
yeah
you found something.
Oh
right
my
there,
gosh.
Buddy.
Yes. I think you're onto something there, Tosin.
Go ahead. Start it over. Everything's about sound. Go for it, Tosin.
I was like, whoa, did something happen? yeah. So, I mean, I think we know that's how you get into the inner soul and inner mindset of who humans are, right? We know that through some of the wavelengths, you can cause control through other wavelengths. It's what did Charlotte say? The God song, right?
Uh-huh,
ultimately.
Uh-huh.
And now we know that one of the core sound waves, right, is this like connectivity, this family, this love, this sort of perception that as we called out is like makes it less of a choice, right? I guess that goes back to what Franny said.
Yeah.
It's not a choice for them. It's that innate code for humans that is that underlying sound theme. And maybe that's
parasites,
why,
right?
Yeah maybe like, that's like, why the hosts, like during those conversations where they talk to the, you know, the outside, the outliners, they realize, like, via the voice of the outliners, they realize there's this tone that they can't hear. And this is also why, like, they're scratching at their itches. They're like, I hate the sounds that these humans make, because they realize there's this sound that they just can never, or never, something that is never like part of what a host can actually truly be or truly defines them. It's this missing part of the maze, right? That's the central core of it.
Man, Tosin, I just got chills, because it's like I think you hit on something that like everybody missed here, which is that the, you know, Hale.
I think everybody missed it across the Reddit, across everywhere.
Yeah. Hale like motivates these humans, these infected humans, through the sound waves that control them. And Caleb is motivating Frankie across the country via his own sound wave, this inspirational message that he sends out to her. Man, I think that's something that I think everybody missed, and that's a great connection.
Maeve lays it out earlier. She's like, you can't hear that? And he's like, no, right? Because he can't consciously hear it. The only thing that can hear the sound waves, the low tones, the tones that control, are the hosts and the parasites. So Caleb effectively breaks through, right?
Yeah.
He breaks through, and he gets to Frankie. And on some level, she breaks through to him when she's been leaving her messages. So it's good job, Tosin.
Dwayne, you've got some big picture points.
Yeah. So the first one is that simulations are pretty powerful tools. Like, we know that the Sublime is a simulation. We know that that there were other simulations before, right? So Bernard reveals that simulations were used to test out the hosts before they were implanted into bodies. And Hale seems to want the host to transcend into a simulation, right? Something that's more ethereal than it is physical. And to me, that's a big deal, because I think that might be a clue to maybe what's happening with Christina. Maybe that's, you know, she's in the world and everything like that, but you know, maybe, you know, when she's doing all her storylines and everything, that's kind of like, it's a simulation that then gets passed on to these bodies that are humans. So it's interesting to see the power of simulations, because they're all, like, all three phases have used it, right? So, like, the Westworld used them in the beginning to figure out how to put these hosts into bodies, like how they'd interact before they put them into bodies. Right. And season two, the Sublime is a vast simulation, right? And then now Hale wants to use, Rehoboam in season three used multiple, you know, millions of simulations in order to figure out how to control people.
Right.
Which Bernard did a small version of. And then now Hale wants to use simulations of space to transcend her hosts into. That's higher. And then, of course, there's the sort of data in whatever mysterious data is in hanging out in the Hoover Dam. That might be the Sublime, might be something else. But it's data that they want, so they can kind of do more of this transcendence. So, you know, keep an eye on simulations, because I think that matters a lot. Second thing is, Frankie's trusting Bernard, right? So Bernard says, it's complicated. You'll have to trust me. And he's speaking of using a mirror to copy some of Frankie's personality. And Frankie's trusting Bernard is kind of like bizarre. Even though she doesn't trust him, and eventually ties him and Stubbs up, she can't ignore his actions. So he shows where he's hiding Maeve's control unit so she can choose what to do with it, right? He could have said, I'm going to put this away so it can't be disturbed, but he's showing her where he did it so she can figure out how she's going to do it. He's giving her trust. He's like, I'm not hiding anything I'm doing. And while he doesn't really begin the relationship with full disclosure by saying, hey, I'm a host, I'm here to help, he doesn't actually lie to her about his past. You know, he says things like, Delos kept its guests in the dark the same as its employees and other things like that, right? So he lays out that he's constantly trying to say things that show her he's being as truthful as possible. And the fact that he knows the way the world works a little bit, she sees that what he says comes to pass. So he's like kind of insidiously building trust, even though her instinct is not to trust anybody. When she shoots him, he doesn't try to explain it, right? He just says, it's complicated, you'll have to trust me. He doesn't try to pretend, oh, I got shot or whatever, you know what I mean? And Bernard makes it clear that when he was trying to copy Frankie, there was a reason for it, right? And he also lays out the fact that, you know, his belief in, with all this trust that he's building, he's like, look, Maeve is different, right? And he doesn't just say Maeve is different. He straight up says, I'm sure it would pain her greatly to hear what happened to him when he's talking about Frankie's dad, Caleb. And Frankie goes, you know, as Tosin said before, she has no pain. None of them do. Feelings are just an affect to them, a switch you can turn on and off. You can't love or lose fully when it's just a choice. So, no, I don't have a soft spot for her like apparently you do. And what's great about that line is that we know that Frankie's coming from a place of a genuine place. It's her genuine feelings. Mm-hmm. But we also know how incorrect she is. Maeve does have feelings. Bernard does have feelings. If it weren't for, you know, Arnold losing Charlie, Bernard would not be. And Bernard thinks about that all the time.
Right.
Even when he was in the Sublime and he was coming out of it at the very beginning of the season. So for all the heroism that we see in Frankie, the shadow of her father, with the gigantic forehead and everything, what we find is that she still has a lot of things to learn. And I think that was pretty, pretty big. And if not for Bernard's candidness, Frankie may not have returned Maeve's completed control pod to her body, right? The control unit, the pearl, right, whatever you want to call it. And that decision ultimately saved Frankie and Bernard's life, Stubbs's too. So it's interesting to see how Bernard builds trust, you know, the way Jeffrey Wright is using the character.
Yeah.
And especially because he's got this voice, right? Like, you think of great voices on cinema and TV. You think of maybe James Earl Jones, right? Sean Connery, these kind of like voices that kind of command respect.
Yes.
But Wright comes across as very subtle. You know, he comes across as genuine. He speaks in low tones. You kind of have to turn the TV up a little bit to hear what he's saying. Mm. And that sort of like subtlety, the fact that you have to kind of lean in to hear him, and the fact that he doesn't talk too much, he doesn't have big, long speeches or anything like that. It just kind of leads you to have trust for him. I think Jeffrey Wright is really playing the role quite well.
Sure.
So moving on, we talked about perfection. We talked about perfection last time. Like, you know, this wasn't the best world. It was just the perfect one. Remember that last week? And I feel like one of the things that we're seeing here, and we talked about a little bit with Battlestar Galactica and everything, we've got these hosts that are too human to be perfect, right? So again, Hale says, unlike yours, my kind is perfect, perfectly immortal, perfectly rational. Yet they're making irrational choices and choosing mortality, staining themselves with death. How are you making them do that? She can't see that in her mind, everything is so perfect. She can't see that they could have any flaws at all. Mm-hmm. So she has to blame someone else, right? Just like how she blamed last week, like, look what you made me do to my own arm when I scratched it. She's like, how are you making my hosts kill themselves? And she pushed this idea that there's a virus. She pushed this idea. And we know from the first season there was some sort of viral thing going on between the hosts. But on some level, Caleb is like, it's not a virus. It's you.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so Hale's falling into kind of fallacy. She complained to William that many of her hosts have come to New York to treat it as if it were a park. If they were so perfect and so rational, why wouldn't they have left the physical world and gone for, you know, transcendence yet? And I think it's because their bodies mean something to them. So much so that when Caleb stabs that host drone when he's trying to escape, this is a robot who doesn't at all mimic human emotions, human anything.
No.
You know, he grabs his side in pain, right? The host drone grabs its side in pain. And you could think, okay, he's just trying to keep the leaking from going because he wants to function. But the reaction was visceral. It was a quick reaction. And it wasn't like, let me back away from him because he's a threat and do it. It was a reaction that was like pain. That was kind of big. When Hale reveals that she kept a version of Caleb alive to find out how his human self was capable of resisting her fly-based parasites, because that's the only way her host could have been infected, he literally rejects that. And why does he reject it? He goes, they're not, you know, again, they're not actually perfect. They're flawed, like the humans that they're made in the image of, right? And she's flawed too, that they're killing, she's so flawed they're killing themselves to get away from her. But what hit even harder than that for me was, however robotic and however tyrannical Hale is, she still laments the loss of her son, a human. And we know this.
You're not the only one who's lost someone, she says to Caleb.
Exactly. Oh, your daughter, like a broken record. You're not the only one who's lost someone. This is a woman who is a robot, who has enslaved humanity, and her corner, it seems like one of her cornerstone issues isn't like her love for her fake father when she was Dolores, or her love for Teddy. It's her love for her son, the one thing she had that was free of Dolores' influence last season, right? Her ex-husband, her son, these were things that were only hers, and she could like possibly escape and live a bucolic life with them or whatever. And she's sitting here saying, you know, my people are perfect, when in fact, and humans are not, when in fact the thing that's driving her, the thing that's got this all this angst for her and like why she's so angry is because, you know, Dolores took away her son. And, you know, perhaps because of whatever, when she gets to wherever she wants to go when it comes to transcendence or the sublime or whatever, there might be a way for her to get her son back. Who knows? Because Hale was in Westworld for so long that perhaps, you know, her memories of her son could help, you know, this new Hale create a version of it. But yeah, it's zany and crazy to think that Hale's like, everything I do is perfect. And this is one of those kind of megalomaniac, she's got to go down kind of things, because this is the second time we've heard her basically blame everybody else for problems that she has created.
Good points, all of them. Let's get into the technical aspects here. This is where we talk about some of the behind-the-scenes elements we enjoyed in this episode: music, acting, visual effects, etc. I loved... we got a callback, a thematic, music thematic callback in this episode when Bernard is taking the uncorrupted pearl out of that dead host and preparing the transfer into Maeve. You hear Dr. Ford's theme play again. And I thought it was just, it gave me kind of chills to hear that again. It's like the ghosts of Dr. Ford echoing through time and into Bernard's actions.
Thematically, the person that took the pearl out of to kind of wipe clean, that was the Temperance version of Maeve's boyfriend, right?
Was it? Oh, yeah, I didn't even pick that up. It was Temperance Hector.
Temperance Hector, and wow. Hector saved Maeve's life how many times? Right. Yeah. So there he is doing it again,
saving it. It's interesting. That's a good point. The captions at the end of the episode said that they were playing a interpretation of Fleury's Love and War. It must have been pretty brief. I think I heard it, but then it immediately went into this great interpretation of the Westworld theme again at the end of the episode, which I thought was a real banger. So you guys have any technical aspects you wanted to bring up?
I just think the performance.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I did really enjoy the Westworld theme, right? The iteration of the Westworld theme a little bit. That was quite nice. So, yeah.
I think the whole stunt thing with the dummy was just the highlight of mine.
You should see the making of thing at the end of the this week's episode, because it's pretty funny how they pointed that out. And they talked about how Aaron Paul was like, you know, I know when not to do my own stunts. I'll just let somebody else do it, and I'll go get a sandwich or something. So,
well, I was watching it, and my wife was like, how come he doesn't just climb down that scaffold there? And I like had to give her some headcanon, like, it's behind where the thing is opening up, so he can't see it or whatever. She's like, well, can he just climb down and hold on to the bottom of the little panel he opened up and then drop from there?
I mean, I would just try to land on one of the previous Calebs down on the ground if I were
him. Yeah, I don't know how good I am at moving myself in the air to land on like dead Caleb, but yeah, you know. Also, they, you know, he wasn't exactly a person with complete body faculties. He's pretty much disabled by
that's true. That's true. All right, let's talk about ephemera. These are links and extra textual connections that'll help you enhance your enjoyment of the episode. I wanted to bring up a movie from 2009 called Triangle, but I'm not going to tell you why it's relevant, because it's a bit of a spoiler for that movie. Let's just say
we can add Moon to that. We're not going to say why, but there's definitely a reason Moon and Triangle are tied to this episode. And again, we're benefiting from all of the sci-fi that Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan have taken in when we watch this show.
Yes. I will say, though, with both of those movies, Moon and Triangle, it's best to go in knowing as little as possible before you go into those movies.
That's how I feel about every movie.
Yes. Well, that's true. Tosin, how about yourself?
There's a couple games I wanted to call out. These are similar to the similar style games where they're platformers, you run and gun, you try and move as quickly as possible, and you die a lot. And those two are Super Meat Boy and Celeste. And these are sort of great games, definitely worthwhile playing. They are a bit difficult, you know, they're not trivial, but definitely check them out.
I think Alice in Wonderland is something that we've always talked about, but a lot of people haven't actually read the book Through the Looking Glass. So if you have a chance, definitely check that out. Again, Memento, that's one of the films that that broke Nolan and both Christopher and Jonathan Nolan into the mainstream. So if you haven't seen that film is excellent. Those were the things, aside from Moon, those were the things that I felt like I really felt were connected to this episode. So, and Andy, you want to do some shout outs?
Yeah. So every season that we do this podcast, when we're done recording, I will usually spend the rest of my week listening to other Westworld podcasts and absorbing their information and getting their perspectives. It's really been informative. So I just wanted to give a shout out to some of the other Westworld podcasts that I've been following this season that have, if you've got some free time and you don't want to just choose our podcast to listen to, I would recommend...
But listen to ours first.
Listen to ours first, for sure, because we will give you the best perspective on every... It doesn't get any better than that. But, you know, if you can spare some free time to listen to other podcasts, I would recommend these podcasts: the Westworld Theory Cast, Shat on TV, Beyond Westworld, and the HBO Boys. And those guys are all...
That is a very specific group, the HBO Boys.
Well, you know, the funny thing about that group is that they used to be just the Westworld podcast, and then Westworld ended and they decided to do... I think after that, they decided to do Watchmen. And they were like, well, how do we fit Watchmen into our title of our podcast? So they changed the podcast to the HBO Boys.
Gotcha.
But yeah, all of them great podcasts. And if you have any recommendations of other podcasts for us to be checking out, we appreciate that. So drop us a line there.
If you have any recommendations for shows that we should be watching, drop us a recommendation there. We're always arguing about what should be in our watch
absolutely.
List.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, it's time to talk about unanswered questions. And I have a couple of unanswered questions here that I'm sure we will get to within the next couple of episodes. So why did Bernard need to scan Frankie's data? Because, you know, it was sort of like, you know, you don't take someone's DNA or their data without their permission. And he definitely did that. But then when hard pressed, he said, "You have to trust me on this."
Yeah, I mean, given the size of, you know, Caleb and Frankie's foreheads, I feel like it just happens. You just walk by a mirror and boop, the whole thing's there. A lot of surface area. They got big foreheads, man.
I mean, I've got a theory, but maybe I should save that for the spoiler section because...
Okay.
Yeah. And the other question is, why
Hale has a big forehead, too. There's a lot of big foreheads in this show.
Five
heads.
That's
some serious noggins. It's like those are five heads. Yeah.
You know, you got to have that landing space for the flies to
runway.
Yeah. So another question I have is why would the hosts rather kill themselves than submit to Hale's transcendence plans? Like the obvious answer for me is again, as I covered earlier, you know, they feel like they're oppressed. And they want to run screaming subconsciously at the root level. They don't want to be oppressed.
I think there's nothing left for them. If all that's left is like eternity with Hale
yeah.
and the transcendence, you know, that's it's not exactly who's looking forward to that. It's kind of like, imagine if you're Elizabeth Taylor and like you get to eternity and like all of your husbands are there. Like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Eternities for a long time. And I think if you're a robot, you can understand eternities for a long time.
You're like, I wouldn't want to be with you if you were the last deity in transcendence.
Exactly. So it's just like, what are we going to do up there? I can't get up there.
Yeah.
This was a mistake. I'm just going to shut down. She'll wake me up. I got to destroy my pearl. That's really what happened. That's what I think has happened. Tosin, what question did you have?
So one question I had was there was a point where Charlotte said to Caleb, "I offered you a path out. You made your choice. You all did." And so the question I had was, what was the choice that everyone made? And maybe
they made the choice not to tell her.
Was it to, you know, pick up a hat? Stare in the mirror? Like, which are the choices? I mean, those are all choices along the way, but...
She was talking to Caleb about telling her how he was able to avoid control by the parasites, the flies, whatever. And I think what she was implying is that all 278 of them had decided that they weren't going to give her the answer. And because of that, all 278 of them were doomed to be destroyed. But the way out would be... if he told her how he was able to avoid the parasites, the thing that he had that she doesn't, then she would no longer make different Calebs. She'd be done.
So these are the choices that all of the Calebs made, not all of the people.
Right. It's the choices that all the Calebs made. And so what's interesting is that she's relying on him to care about the Calebs that come after him. And at first I'm like, why would he care? But then as you see when he's escaping, all the Calebs that came before him were helping him to escape, or at least the ones that could. And so there's a kind of fraternity there, right? Or fidelity there, if you will. So yeah, she's basically saying, why go through this again and again? I'm just going to wake you up, and one of you is going to experience this again. Just tell me what I want to know. And he doesn't want to, and we're gonna have to. That's one of the mysteries we're hopefully gonna find out in the next two episodes.
Dwayne, how about yourself? Do you have some unanswered questions about this episode?
Yeah. Why does Bernard say the underside of Temperance was not made to last? It's 23 years later.
Yeah.
He slides the door open. The elevator works. The lights work. Clearly, there's power. So, like, not made to last. He's like, watch out, it may not last. I thought, you know, that was going to hint that maybe there'd be some sort of seismic event and you'd fall in and they'd have to get out of there quickly. I don't know, but none of that happened.
Well, my interpretation of that line was that Hale's sole purpose of building that park was as a super spreader to kickstart the parasite.
Yeah, it was never going to be a park for the long term, because the minute she had control over people, she shut it down, because who needs that? I get that. It was an interesting comment to make given what we saw right afterward. Finally, another question is, why not hook Maeve up to, like, there was power there, so why not just hook up Maeve up to that? That was weird. Why hook her up to the car? I didn't get that. Oh. And then the last thing is, two other things. So Maeve has been under the dirt, and he's like, her pearl was corrupted because she was under the dirt. But then he goes and gets another 23-year-old pearl from the dude that was underground on the upside down in Temperance. And I'm like, you figure these heads are sealed. I don't know. I guess it was a little weird that had to happen, that they had to kind of go through those motions of transferring the data.
Maybe it was the explosion, at the concussive demolition shock site. Or something. Yeah.
Yeah, but he basically said she's covered in dirt, so we have to change it. I'm like, okay, I guess so. I don't know why it was dirty. It wasn't like her head was blown open, but so be it. And then finally, what was that thing that Caleb pricked his finger with? Like, why was he compelled to open up the top of the hourglass and then pick up a thing that would prick him? That was confusing to me.
Yeah, I don't know. That seemed like a little extra sort of convoluted point. You know, why not just... I think it was to
have him knock his head and be on the floor.
It was to kickstart the idea that he would pass out, and then the drone host would check on him and initiate the incineration process, and he'd sort of like wake up and like, oh shit, I gotta get out of here, thinking it was all his own idea when really it's
he was compelled to open up the top of the thing and prick himself. That's what's so weird.
Yeah, it's because the other Caleb said something about
pointed.
He said something about time. Yeah, like, you need more time.
Yeah. I would never think, okay, I need more time. Let me go to my clock and crack it open.
By the way, I need myself a giant hourglass like that. I was just looking at it, and I'm like, I need one of those things.
I don't know. Between the cats and the kids, it wouldn't last very long. What's this? Glass and sand all over my floor. No thanks.
Yeah, maybe that's not a well.
You bring it to your office so that whenever.
There you go.
Whenever someone walks in your office, you're like, you turn it over. You're like,
you got this much time.
Yeah, yeah. That's not a bad idea.
I could see a lot of people doing that with their spouses when it comes to frisky time.
Yikes! All right. We are about to get into some spoilers here, so if you don't want to hear any spoilers about our theories, tune out now. We're going to play a little music so that you've got a little time to tune out. Otherwise, stick around and listen to these far-fetched theories. Here we go, after this music break. All right, so Dwayne, do you have a spoilery theory about what's going on in the rest of the season?
I think Hale is done with previous attempts at Caleb. Like, she woke up the new one, but when Caleb 278 was out and about, Caleb's like, let's call him basically 270 to 277 were out there too, and she destroyed them all. Right? She also knows that Frankie's alive, and she knows that her mole is dead. So perhaps with, when it comes to previous attempts of Caleb, she's done with them. She burns them all. And the new version either shows that she's either remarkably patient in her attempts at fidelity and is going to try something new because there's no old versions around to help him, or that the newest version of Caleb is a soldier for her, like the Man in Black, instead of a straight Caleb that's trying to be a person, right? And I say that because she told Clementine that she'd like to put an end to this. So whatever she was doing, she might be like over with. Now, obviously, she might want to put an end to the whole New York human park thing. But I really feel like she's doing something different with Caleb 279. So we'll see what happens there. That's my first theory. Any thoughts?
I mean, I think that's a really good theory. I feel like there's something about Caleb that resists being commanded by Hale. So whatever it is that she has to do when she reboots this new Caleb, she's got to do it secondhand and not directly like make him a soldier.
Right. Okay. All right. I can see that. My next theory is that Caleb's use, Hale's use of Caleb's copies as a means to understand some truth that she wanted out of Caleb, namely, what do you have that she doesn't have that kept him free of her, you know, free of her like a thrall with the, with the parasites. Her use of Caleb that way seems to give foundation to the idea that she has recreated or reanimated Dolores as Christina to get information out of that person about Dolores of the past. So, I mean, that's something I've been hanging on to the whole entire season, and I feel as if that's a possibility.
I mean,
it just feels more of a possibility now.
Yes.
That the reason why Christina exists is so that Hale can patiently use examples and stuff to extract information out of her.
I absolutely think you've got something there. I think you're onto something there. And I think we, you know, we got a little hint of it in, I can't remember what was the last episode, the episode before, where I think it was the last episode where she met with, Christina met with Hale, and Hale said, you know, essentially said, I have ways of making you tell me, but she doesn't use them. And I don't think it's
right. Right.
I think it's because she really can't. She has to sort of let Christina find her own way through this situation. She let has to keep her out, independent. Yeah. I do have a theory, and it relates to what I mentioned, the unanswered question I mentioned in the last segment. Why does Bernard need to scan Frankie's data? And I think it's because, you know, Bernard has this this Doctor Strange-like foresight to see the permutations of everything going on. So I think maybe Frankie gets killed.
He doesn't know what's up with Frankie.
But I think somehow he sees her die. So he scanned her data, like, right now in order to revive her as a host or upload her to the Sublime after whatever goes down in the next couple episodes goes down, so that he can reunite
a version of her and a version of Caleb can be in the Sublime together.
Exactly, my friend. Exactly.
That's clever. Well, it's funny because it's two copies of people.
Yes.
The actual people are gone, but you know, those two copies could be happy together.
If you can't tell the difference, does it matter?
Yep, because they're dead. It's like if someone's like, Dwayne, I'm going to shoot you and give a copy to your family. Like, I don't want to be shot. I don't want to be dead so that a copy could be with my family. No, thanks. That's not my way. But yeah, I mean, that's a solid, I like that. And I like it because they spent a lot of time that they didn't need to spend saying that the mirror does things very fast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, given all that hat wearing, the fact that the mirror did it just like that, Bernard scanned Frankie right then and there, and she noticed it, and she pulled it up, and so all that information is right there.
Yep.
I mean, why the hell is he doing it if he doesn't, you know, if he's not gonna try to, you know, build a new Frankie
right,
one day?
Right, right.
Maybe he's gonna build a new Frankie and use that as a decoy for Hale. Right?
Could be.
You know, Hale's like, I got you, Frankie, right here.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But it's not really Frankie. It's a fake Frankie. And, you know, who knows what pearl that is. But, yeah, it's copying Frankie makes sense. It's a shame that all the characters end up hosts. If I've got any flaw with the show, it's the idea that, like, you can't be a human on the show for more than, like, 10 episodes before you become a host.
But in a way, I like it because it does, on a logistical sense, it retains the same actors for the duration of the series, right? We don't have to get used to a whole new...
Right. So, like, that's a good thing. I just feel like, for instance, Aaron Paul could have stayed just live human Caleb and not become host Caleb. You know, they could put some gray hair on him or whatever. And then, you know, Frankie, you know, I like Frankie. So, you know, she could... She and her girlfriend could grow old together. That'd be cool. But the idea that, like, everybody eventually becomes a host. Like, you know, the Man in Black becomes a host. Like,
yeah.
The foils to the hosts all become hosts because the host will always win, kind of. So that's an interesting thing. But yeah.
Well, that is going to do it for this episode of Violent Delights. I'm going to go around the table. I'll start with you, Dwayne, and ask, where can people find your work on the internet when you're not here talking about Westworld?
Check me out on Twitter, twitter.com/DwayneD. You'll see me right here on Violent Delights for the next 2 weeks. Tosin, what about you?
You can catch me at twitter.com/Toast4321. What about yourself, Andy? Where can we catch you?
You can catch me at my Twitter handle, Mr. Babyman, obviously our Twitter handle for the show, HBO Westworld Pod. Outside of that, you can find me here every week covering for the Westworld for the next couple weeks. And that's it. So join us on next week's episode when we cover the 7th episode of Westworld's 4th season, which is called Metanoia. This is really interesting.
Penultimate annoying episode, metanoia.
Because metanoia, the definition of metanoia is a change in one's way of life resulting from penitence or spiritual conversion. Scratches his beard. So that'll be interesting.
I wonder if it's going to be a Hale. I want Hale to change her ways because she's a tyrant.
Interesting.
Maybe she'll get bangs.
I don't think she's gonna. I think she remains a is going to remain a character without a redemption arc.
Okay.
All right. So until then, please tweet us, write us an email, or drop us a comment on iTunes, and we will see you guys next week.
All right. Thanks, everybody.